Totally Football Show. Today, Champions League, PSG bring the thunder, Liverpool blunder, Atletico quite literally gaze in wonder as Chelsea put them under, and Man United tear Cisca asunder. Rare that a visitor to Moscow enjoys dominance with such a golden performance, unless you're in the presidential suite, of course. We marvel at the midweek thrills and spills, then look ahead to the weekend. United host Palace, Huddersfield try and halt Harry Kane, Burnley visit Everton, but above all, Man City visit Chelsea. All of that plus questions, bit of Italy, toil and trouble for the witches of the south, and France as PSG meet up with the league's other young superstar. It is the Totally Football Show. And on your Totally Football Show today, it's a big welcome back to Michael Cox.
Hello, James.
Zonalmarking.net.
That's the one. The domain hasn't expired yet.
All right. And general football expertise with some big things to say about the midweek action. James Horncastle.
That's me.
Who's been all up in that Champions League match day two. And Julien Laurent.
Bonjour.
And Julien, congratulations are in order.
Thank you.
Also, you had a baby this last week.
Yes. Yeah. 9 days ago. Thank you.
All right. But of course, you've got a big grin on your face, which has been there pretty much since yesterday.
Yes, James. I have to say, as a PSG fan, it was a wonderful evening yesterday against Bayern Munich. One of those that I think put a marker down, you know, for other big clubs in Europe, saying, you know, you have to take them seriously. You have to take Paris seriously, because everything was not perfect, but they looked so, so good.
Didn't they, though? The last time I saw them look this good was when they beat, do you remember, Barcelona last year in the Champions League? That went well for them.
No, I can't. No, you're right.
Is this different?
It's a different team. Okay. It is a different team. There's certainly more experience in that team with Dani Alves and Neymar coming in. You've got the Mbappe factor that you didn't have last season, for example. You also have another way of playing on the counter-attack, which they were mostly unable to do before in the Ibrahimovic years, but also last season, despite Unai Emery trying to get them to play with more pace in transition, to play a bit more on the counter, they just couldn't do it really. We saw against Bayern on Wednesday night that they're just becoming very good at it. So they can play in possession when they have to, away at Celtic, for example, where they had loads of the ball. And score 5 goals. But also, when they're a bit under pressure, when the other team has the ball, and that was the plan from Emery on Wednesday night, they knew that Bayern would have a lot of the ball. They knew they would come to play football, so they knew they would hit them on the counter, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, I gave up counting after, I think, 16 corners for Bayern Munich. But for them to have that many opportunities with the likes of Lewandowski waiting around in the area and not get a single goal from it speaks volumes, I guess, about, well, either their finishing or PSG's solidity at the back. Of course, as you were saying before, there's only two words we need for this game. One is Kylian and the other one is Mbappe. Michael, I know you were watching the Chelsea game, so I don't know why I'm even looking at you, but he's astonishing.
Yeah, there's been lots of focus upon the two big names in Mbappe and Neymar. But I think maybe an equally important signing for this season, at least, is Dani Alves, who's a player. Obviously, he's experienced incredible success at Barcelona. We saw his impact at Juventus last year. And I think people can overlook the fact that, OK, he's not as big a name as Neymar, but this is a player who's one of the best right-backs of all time. And he scored the first goal last night. He had hand in the second two. And the thing about him is he's not just dynamic and quick and good at getting up and down. He's really good on the ball. I think for other sides, he could play as a midfield player, central midfield player. And we saw that yesterday, a couple of really good penetrative passes. He's just given him a different dimension, I think.
Lovely. But Mbappe, eh, Jules? Hey?
Incredible. I mean, I don't know. We've talked so much about him in the last 9 months, really, since that breakthrough.
But yesterday, it felt like he kicked it on another level.
Yeah, and he's got 8 matches in the Champions League. So he's only 18. We have to keep reminding each other he's only 18. But 8 Champions League matches with Monaco and PSG, 7 goals, 1 assist. Yesterday, you can even maybe count the Neymar goal as an assist from him, because he humiliated David Alaba with that little trick before the Neymar's goal. It's just incredible. And it's the intelligence, it's the maturity, it's the movement as well, on the ball, off the ball. The skills, obviously the talent is there, but it's just how quickly he's adapted to a whole new environment with more pressure than at Monaco, with more expectations than at Monaco as well. And it's never easy to come home as well. You know, this is his club and this is his team. And his hometown, and for him to come back with all that, all the talks about the money, the transfer, all like I said, all the pressure, the expectation, I think he's doing amazingly well.
Wow, Neymar never got a look in for the Ballon d'Or at Barca because, of course, Messi was there and you have Ronaldo. Is it possible that the player who does break their duopoly will be another PSG teammate, Mbappe himself.
Yeah,
I mean, going to say Cavani.
I mean, of course, if France, let's say, if he has a great role in France doing well at the World Cup, for example, you know, Mbappe and PSG doing well with Mbappe putting performances like he did against Bayern, you know, he would get closer and closer. He's not yet in, I think, the Neymar, Messi and Ronaldo dimension, but he's getting closer and closer. And there was something funny at the end of the game. Him and Franck Ribéry were having a chat on the touchline. And the thing about Mbappe is he talks like a 40-year-old. He really talks like if he was 40. And Ribéry is far more streetwise, if you want. And the joke, especially on social media, on Twitter, was to imagine what they were saying. And people had Ribéry talking like, you know, like in the hood. And in return, Mbappe saying, but sir, you know, let's not get carried away with like really posh words. And that's exactly where Mbappe is. And it's so funny that he's only 18. And one, he's so good on the field. And off the field, he's just so measured and intelligent in everything he does.
Right, George, you're a happy man.
I am indeed.
Yeah. Let's talk about Ancelotti then, because he was already in trouble before this game. It was a real shock. Bayern Munich firing their manager in September. Some doubt about who'll be taking over. Julian Nagelsmann's always been lined up for this, Jules, no?
Yeah, for next season. So arriving in the summer where it was quite clear that whatever happened this season, Carlo Ancelotti wouldn't continue as a Bayern manager, although he's got another year left on his contract, and that Nagelsmann would come from Hoffenheim in the summer.
When Nagelsmann outcoached Ancelotti earlier this season, he came out and said, I'm building a house in Munich. I'm from Munich. My wife loves it in Munich.
So many hints, like, you know, yeah.
That was
sounds
in Hoffenheim,
like,
was it 2-0?
Paris.
Yeah, exactly, yes.
Well, anything but a show support from the Bayern players after the game. I and Robin asked if the Bayern squad was behind the coach. Robin said, I won't answer this question, although I guess he could be trying to not dignify it with a response. But Rafa Honigstein on the goal show, particularly damning, saying, I don't think anyone at Bayern thought it was possible that all of their positional and possession play could disappear so quickly, which I guess is why the club had decided to act now. Ancelotti, the story, is not particularly concerned either way. He didn't look very bothered ahead of this game, did he?
No, I was really surprised. He was obviously coming back to Paris, where he had such a great time there, you know, between 2011 and 2013. But before the game in the tunnel, he was literally waiting there for the PSG players to come out of their dressing room and kissed and hugged every and each one of them. Marco Verratti, he spent a few minutes with him and, you know, like speaking to him and kissing him so many times. And I was like, okay, maybe just wait for that for the end of the match, maybe. But he looks so relaxed, and he's always been very laid back. But that was like proper relaxed before such a big game.
Why do you think he struggled so much at Bayern?
I think replacing Guardiola is very difficult in terms of, you know, Guardiola is just so intense, and his training sessions just force players to kind of think so much, and he teaches them. Ancelotti's not really one for developing that kind of football. He's a kind of laissez-faire manager, gets the big players on board.
Although that's the weird thing, that he hasn't. You've had Lewandowski speaking out about him or about the club. You've certainly had Thomas Müller complaining loudly about him.
Yeah, I mean, the Müller thing, I think, was sourness that he wasn't playing, really. The Lewandowski thing's more significant, I agree. Yeah.
All right. Well, all of this potentially very good news for Celtic, who will be facing Bayern Munich home and away next. Celtic, who had a 3-0 win at Anderlecht this midweek. That's only their second ever away win in the Champions League. They're now level on points with Bayern. Should they pick up something in those games? And, you know, the way they played at home last season, who would put it past them? You could see a managerless Bayern slipping into the third spot and the Europa League. And, of course, Arsenal fans, you know how this ends.
The teams dropping into the Europa League at the moment from the Champions League, it's only match day 2. Juventus, Atletico Madrid, Borussia Dortmund, Monaco, Napoli. Can you just imagine that? I mean, particularly in that that group of death that you see Spurs, Real Madrid and Dortmund in. And now, maybe to a lesser extent, the Chelsea, Roma, Atletico one as well. It's it could be quite interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not forget that last season Real Madrid drew Legia Warsaw 3-0, for example, couldn't beat Borussia Dortmund and still went on to win the Champions League. So, yeah, Bayern were well beaten last night. They had, in the first half, it was not so bad. I thought the way they played, the way they reacted after the first goal, you know, and yes, they've been, you know, average in the league as well at times, but let's just not, you know.
Fair point, Jules. Yeah. And they were
carried away like you did yesterday.
No, but I was happy. Of course, I was happy.
One other thing we should mention, after kind of being a little bit voyeuristic and dwelling on that whole business of Cavani and Neymar and the bust up, etc. Quite heartwarming scenes between them. The embraces between the Brazilian and the Uruguayan on the turf at the Parc des Princes last night.
And I watched the game again when I got home, and there was stuff that. The times where Cavani didn't have to go to Neymar, there was a time just after the start of the second half when Neymar had a shot missed and Cavani went and sort of like hugged him. There was a few things like that that he didn't have to do, and maybe it was a bit forced or maybe it was not so natural. But, you know, let's see how he goes. I think in all dressing rooms you've got tensions. All big players with big egos have tensions, you know, and Neymar went to have a party, as he often does after a big game, and he went to a little restaurant in the first arrondissement in Paris, Ferdi, which is really nice and really trendy. Edison Cavani was not there, but do you know who was there? Lenny Kravitz.
Really?
And they partied together with Lenny Kravitz. That's my little gossip of the day.
Well, that's fantastic. Cavani on the score sheet, of course, against Bayern, which is... made him part of an exclusive Champions League club. You have a stat for us, I think, Julien.
I do. It's even a pub quiz question, really.
All right. You ready, Michael?
Only the fifth player
yes.
to have scored in six consecutive Champions League matches.
All right. Michael, can you give us the other four?
I think one is Ronaldo.
Yeah.
Cristiano.
Yeah.
I know the kind of pointless answer, so to speak, is Marouane Chamakh.
Well done.
I'm struggling on the... Oh, was it the guy who was at Olympiakos?
Mitroglou?
Fulham.
No,
but it's someone like this.
We've got two more to go, haven't we? Is one of them quite? Is it Messi?
One, no.
Ruud van Nistelrooy.
Ruud van Nistelrooy,
and one Turkish striker.
Yilmaz.
Yeah, Burak Yilmaz, who had that incredible spell at some point.
At some point, who remembers?
And if Lewandowski had scored,
yes,
he would have been part of. He would have been the sixth to have done it as well, but he didn't score because PSG was just so good defensively.
Voila. Wow, so PSG roll on and mixed week for France with Monaco's ongoing collapse. We'll look at that a little bit later on. Bayern, as I mentioned, one of three German sides losing. All the three Italian sides won. It's quite big, isn't it? As you mentioned, going above Germany in the coefficient now. For now, mixed times for Portugal. Premier League did pretty well, only Liverpool dropping points. But the performance of the round, some would say, or perhaps even more than that, came from Chelsea, and we'll look at that after this.
Tweet us at The Totally Football Show, find us on Facebook, and check us out at thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Here's Michael Cox on the Twitter. One of the best away performances I've seen in Europe in recent years, talking there about Chelsea and their 2-1 victory at the newly inaugurated Wanda Metropolitano against Atletico Madrid. Somebody on Football 365 calling it the best Champions League win this decade. Why were you so impressed with a narrow win?
Because Atletico have tremendous pedigree in this competition. I think tactically they're one of the best teams have been for the last 5 years. And it was just the control that Chelsea had. I mean, Atletico didn't have one chance, really. They scored a penalty because David Luiz, you know, did a really unnecessary shirt pull. But I think Chelsea's system, they switched to a kind of 3-5-1-1. They had Hazard, who was absolutely electric, floating behind Morata, who was really good, always on the shoulder of the defence. And I think Conte just got the better of Simeone, who's just, you know, so rarely outclassed tactically at this level. There was a couple of nice little switches. He started with Bakayoko in the holding role. And there's been a lot of kind of focus upon the fact Chelsea let Matic go and question why they did. And maybe it's strange to let him go to a title rival. But Bakayoko is an upgrade on Matic. He's a much better player. He's better in possession. I think positionally he's more disciplined. But then Conte did a very interesting switch where he moved Fabregas, who was playing in a more advanced role, behind Bakayoko and Kante. So he had Bakayoko and Kante kind of pressing further forward.
Why did he do that?
Because he wanted to get Fabregas on the ball in deeper positions. Atletico didn't really have anyone in that zone playing as a number 10, kind of marking him. And it reminded me a lot of how Conte played at Juventus with Pirlo in that role, and then Vidal and Pogba playing their kind of pressing roles. But it was just, I mean, even the fact that Chelsea won it with a last-minute goal, I think will just give them a tremendous boost psychologically. They probably could have won that game 3-0 and been comfortable by half-time. But when you go away, you know, in Europe, and you win with the last kick of the game, it will just give them such a lift, and the supporters as well will have had a great time. I think it's, you know, it reminded me of when the Premier League teams were really on top in Europe, and you had, you know, I remember Arsenal going away to Real Madrid and winning 1-0.
God, those were the days.
Yeah, Manchester United away at Roma, really good performance. Just not letting the opposition have a sniff and then creating constant chances. You don't really see that much in Europe anymore.
Costa's face at the end, James.
Yeah, I mean, it was the performance of the night, and that was the picture of the night from Costa. And you have to say that at this present moment in time, Chelsea looked to have done rather well out of that deal, because I think to get what could be in total, what, 65 million euros for a player who is 29. So they've made money on Costa because they bought him for around 40. And Morata, I mean, has just been brilliant for them. I think gives them a lot. I think a lot of people were wondering whether Chelsea would lose a player who could kind of receive the ball around the halfway line and then turn and drive at defenders. But we saw Morata do that on an occasion last night. We've seen him do it in the past for Juventus or Bayern Munich. And I think Morata, in games like that, he's just got this great pedigree of scoring in big games and big European nights, and he did that again.
Well, Chelsea next up will be hosting Man City back in the Premier League on Saturday. Conte less than happy about playing so soon after his trip to Madrid. But a massive game this, of course, for both clubs. Chelsea with the chance to pull level with the early high flyers. And we have seen City held before by Everton, of all people. So what do we anticipate happening here?
I think there'll be goals. I think it'll be a very open game. I think the first meeting between them last season was probably the best game of last year when Chelsea won 3-1 at the Etihad. I'm just really looking forward to the game. I think it also features probably the two best players in the Premier League at the moment, in Eden Hazard and Kevin De Bruyne.
Right.
I think it'll be a close game, but yeah, I think it'll be open and plenty of goals.
Tom Johnson says, with Hazard returning and Morata on fire, surely Otamendi, Stones et al. Don't stand a chance on Saturday evening.
Well, to be honest, City have been kind of much better defensively since they shifted away from playing a back three to a back four. But of course, I think in this fixture last year, I think we saw Guardiola try and match up with Chelsea and play a kind of 3-4-3. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of decision from a tactical point of view that Guardiola does, whether he sticks with this system that they've been playing to great effect, really, at the moment, or try and tailor-make this game plan for Chelsea.
City with that tremendous record coming into the midweek game, 16 goals scored in three matches, two against a surprisingly feisty-looking Shakhtar Donetsk team, who certainly had chances themselves as well. But this is actually the first time ever that Man City have won their first two group games in the Champions League. So that's impressive. How much is the absence of Benjamin Mendy going to cost them?
It's a huge blow. We saw Fabian Delph playing a left back against Shakhtar. Danilo has played there against Palace when Mendy got injured, replaced him. So it'd be interesting to see what Pep does on Saturday against Chelsea. If he goes with Danilo. I would be surprised if Delph starts a left back in such a big game. But it's a big blow, not just because, you know, offensively Mendy brings you a lot, and that's what he does. He's so powerful going forward. But I think also there was already a good understanding between him and Leroy Sané, for example. We've seen that when they were playing together, even with him and Sterling, you know, even with David Silva, who's often the one on the left side of that midfield three. So it is a huge blow, and you know, that's what you do, though. When you don't buy a backup left back in the summer, or if you thought that Danilo could do that job, we'll see if he can really do that job.
Big test as well for Pep Guardiola and Conte, as you were describing, able to switch things around so effectively during games. Is that something we see from Guardiola as much?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, there's lots of in-game tweaks with Guardiola. I think what he'll do this weekend is a big question, because I feel like he might want to match up Chelsea's system with the three at the back, but they don't have Kompany and they don't have Mendy, so I don't really think they can play that way. I think they're going to have to stick with the back four. But they have got such great attacking options. It was good to see Sterling, you know, involved again in the goals. He's had a great start to the season, and you know, I think there was real speculation just before the end of the transfer window that he might be on his way, but he's been one of City's best players so far this season.
And that was one of the little takeaways from midweek in the Champions League, was the impact that depth that both these sides have had on their respective games, because you saw Bernardo Silva and Sterling come off the bench and combine for the second goal, and obviously Batshuayi come on and get the winner for Chelsea.
Batsman.
Could Conte play the same formation against City that he did at Atletico, which means that having a, you know, Fabregas, Bakayoko and Conte in midfield because you know that that's where City will be very good as well? Or do you think it doesn't really work at home in a game like that?
I think he might do, but I'd be surprised if he played Fabregas in that deep role, just because he'll be after having to pick up De Bruyne and Silva, and I don't think that will be a good option for Chelsea. But I'm really excited to see Hazard playing as a number 10, because I thought there was a few games last season, towards the end of last season, when he got marked out of the game by Herrera, in particular Old Trafford. And I wasn't sure that, you know, I was surprised he didn't seem to be showing that intelligence to move across the pitch and get away from his man. But when he's playing as a number 10, he seems to have license to drift around. And, you know, he wasn't the one who won the game yesterday, but in the first half hour, he was the one who really put them in control and completely dominated Thomas Partey, who had a really difficult game. Surprised not to see Gabby in there. I think Gabby's always big for Atletico.
Partey pooper.
Yeah. Hey, tell you what, we're not going to better that, are we, in terms of analysis? So there you go, Chelsea-Man City. Absolutely huge game this Saturday tea time. Totally Football Live. Yeah, that's right. Totally Football Show is going on the road. Wednesday, November the 8th at the Glee Club. Oh, I can confirm the lineup. Some of the lineup. Ian McIntosh will be there. James.
Yeah.
And you'll be doing a selection of tracks from your greatest hits, including You've Got That Ibe, a la Dice. And, you know, a bit of Wham probably as well. Get your tickets at glee.co.uk. More than half have gone already. More than half. But if you miss out on that, listeners, don't worry, because we're going to be mopping up any remaining resistance at the O2 Arena on Friday, November the 29th. That's in London. It's in the little bit of the O2 Arena, the Indigo. That's exciting. Ian's going to be on that one as well. It's almost like it's contractual or something. Rafa Honigstein joining him. If you're listening, by the way, to this on Thursday, then we've already got early bird tickets available at axs.com/UK/events. But if you're listening on Friday, get along to theo2.co.uk. There's all that information on our Facebook page, Totally Football Show. Liverpool and Man United in Moscow this midweek. Liverpool, as I mentioned before, the only one of the Premier League sides not to come home with a victory. Another draw for them. After their initial 2-2 with Sevilla, this time at Spartak. And there's been a major shift, a quantum shift, if you like, of the narrative vis-a-vis Liverpool. Loads of people, Ken Early, for example, explaining that it's not the defending anymore. The fact that, once again, Spartak scored with a set piece doesn't matter. It's not the defending anymore. It's the finishing. And the stats do make pretty compelling reading. In their last six games, in which Liverpool have only won once, they have had 126 shots to the opposition's 49, but they've only scored seven while they've conceded 12, i.e. they can convert, James, 5.55%, and their opposition, they allow to convert 24%. Well, that's a problem, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that. What's the XG?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, if Liverpool are taking a lot of low-percentage shots, then, you know, you'd expect them to not score many goals. But
right. They should have won this game, though, shouldn't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they should. They should have. They had plenty of chances, plenty of control of it as well. I think Spartak had two shots on target, one being the free kick that led to the goal where Karius should have done better, probably, and another one in the second half that Karius saved. But apart from that, it was all about Liverpool. The Fab Four started, Mane, Salah, Firmino and Coutinho all together for the first time this season in an official match. Lasted for 70 minutes until Mane was taken off. They had a moment of brilliance, and the Coutinho goal is a 1-2 between him and Mane, for example. Mm-hmm. I think Salah was involved a lot, missed a big chance with a header towards the end. But they will have to take the chances, and there's nothing Klopp can do about making them work even harder. They're finishing at training, but he can't be there on the pitch for them to score. So it's a worry, because I've got another stat about shots. In two Champions League matches, they had 40 shots. And again, it depends what kind of shots, from where, etc., etc. But still, 40 shots
on target.
40 shots in those two games, on and off target.
Oh, okay.
And they couldn't win either of those games against Sevilla and against Spartak. And
right.
And it has to be a worry. But at least the Fab Four looked
right
in a game like this.
The Fab Four, as you mentioned, a lot of excitement when the team sheet was unveiled in Moscow, featuring Coutinho, Firmino, Salah and Mane. But is that really a formation that works for them? Is it unbalanced?
No, I don't think it's unbalanced, no. But the problem with the defending and the attacking, you know, not defending set pieces and not scoring goals, in a way it's the same problem. You know, he's built a team that is basically a team of midfield players, a team who can press, a team who's very good at playing passing combinations, but you don't have players who specialise in the penalty boxes. So it's exactly the same problem he had in his final season at Dortmund, when Dortmund were in the relegation zone until Christmas, and yet you watched the game and they played really well. They pressed really well, they won the ball quickly, they created lots of chances.
But they don't have big men at the back.
Well, they don't have players who excel in the penalty boxes, and that's where games are won and lost.
Mm.
You know, Liverpool are going to dominate every game, but they don't have, you know, Firmino is not a natural goal scorer, and
right.
I'm not sure some of the defenders are natural defenders. You look at Matip, okay, he's played in defence for a few years, but often played in midfield in Germany as well. So it's a deliberate approach to structure the team in the sense that they're all comfortable in midfield. They don't have players at either end.
Do you know who would have sorted this out? Rafa Benitez.
Well,
I wonder how many Liverpool fans will be casting an envious eye across at the Newcastle bench at St James's Park, because, good Lord, that's where Liverpool are going to be going this weekend to take on their much-loved former manager. What a game that could be, eh? 1-6. Are they going to improve those figures away at St James's Park, Julian?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the kind of game where the opposition will play. That's the thing. That's where they're good at, because they've got spaces up front for Mane and Salah. It'd be interesting to see if the Fab Four starts again in another away game. I think it was easier for Klopp to put them against Spartak, because Spartak is just such a bad team. They're really bad. They're really average. He might not do it against away at Newcastle, because there might be a bit more pressure in midfield. But if he does, I think they will have spaces ahead of them to exploit. And I think it'd be very interesting for them. It's the kind of game where they do well, I think.
They conceded 10 goals in the last three away. Liverpool, of course, the bulk of those coming at Manchester City. Newcastle won the last two at home, 3-0 against West Ham, 2-1 against Stoke. How convinced are you by what Rafa Benitez has been able to do with a below-par squad?
Yeah, I think he's done a good job in terms of bringing the structure and the discipline and the usual Benitez things. I'm not sure that they have the attackers really to maintain it.
Mitrovic could be back, do you think, this weekend?
Yeah, maybe he could be useful. I think the interesting player here is Perez, who plays the number 10 role. Mm. It's usually the one position where Benitez likes a little bit of flair. But Perez has been given a role where he's all about discipline, he's all about pressing. I think that could be interesting against Jordan Henderson this weekend, because I think Henderson's had a very poor start to the season. Was excellent last year in his first year in that holding role. But I think Perez is the kind of player who will really cause him problems with and without the ball. So I think Newcastle will score, but I think Liverpool will create chances. And I don't think their poor conversion rate will go on forever. I think eventually they'll start to score goals. And they'll be playing Sturridge, I expect, which could be a good thing, because he is, and I know he missed a chance the other night, but he's a good finisher.
Player.
And he's got a very good record at St James's Park as well.
Does he?
I think he's scored in his last five there.
Question for you, Jules. This from producer Ben. Newcastle, only Arsenal have had more French players than they've had at St James's Park. Why? What is it about Newcastle that makes the French flock there?
Because when Graham Carr was there, he's not there anymore, but when Graham Carr was there, he recognised very early that the French market could be very interesting for English clubs. Him and Arsene Wenger on that level were on the same page, really. And he went to get Moussa Sissoko for €1.5 million. He went to get Yohan Cabaye, who Arsenal, you know, turned down the opportunity of signing Cabaye. He went to Newcastle for €5 million. And they were great. They got to a point, though, where some of their choices, they went too much to France, you know, players
Tauvin.
Like Gouffran. Yeah, there was a few, although Tauvin maybe was more down to the context. So they didn't all work out. But I think very early they recognised that it was a good market for them and for English football.
If you were going to buy a talent from Ligue 1 for some bargain basement price, who would it be?
Oh, man, I need a bit of time for that, James.
Well, why not Malcolm?
Yes, but Malcolm won't be cheap, that's the thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
is he already?
He's not a bargain. He's already that good that he won't go for less than €20 million.
Who is Malcolm? But it's still a bargain. I mean,
yeah, I guess so, but I'm not sure Newcastle, for example, as we were talking about them, can pay €20 million.
Who is Malcolm?
Malcolm is a Brazilian winger who's only 20 but has been outstanding this season in Ligue 1. And also last season, he had a bit of time to adapt to the league, but he's been fantastic. Four assists and three goals this season. As many assists as Neymar, for example. Bordeaux, a third in the league, unbeaten in the last 13 games in Ligue 1. It's a lot down to Malcolm and his movement. When he's on the ball, he's fantastic. He creates so much and he's relentless in how he attacks all the time. And he's a very interesting player.
All right. Well, and who are Bordeaux playing this weekend, Jules?
PSG, James.
Wow. Is it home or away?
Away in Paris, where they have a bad record in the last few years.
Right.
But they've been playing so well. They're so well organized. They've been really clever the way Jocelyn Gourvennec, the young bright manager, has lined them up so far this season. And it'd be a really good test from PSG, who might still be a bit on cloud nine after the Bayern and all that thing, and maybe not so ready for the contest that Bordeaux are going to bring.
Right. Well, I know a lot of people would be disappointed that Malcolm is a winger and not playing in the middle, but, you know, what can you do?
Isn't that I kind of yearn for the days when Brazilian footballers were called like Ronaldinho and Ronaldo rather than Fred and Alan and Malcolm? Just sounds like an Australian bowling attack from the
1980s. Yeah, nicely done. Man United, Michael. Man United, another four goals. We're only in September. They've already scored four goals on five occasions this season. It's crazy, isn't it? Lukaku, once again, with a brace away at CSKA Moscow. But exceptional night as well from Martial. Mohamed Mualim pointing out, Man United's last seven goals. Mkhitaryan with the assist from Martial. Lukaku with the assist from Martial. Martial himself. Lukaku with the assist from Martial. Lukaku, Martial and Lingard with the assist from Martial. This is extraordinary, given that he's rarely a starter.
Yeah, I think he might have benefited from the fact that there's not so much pressure now. You know, he came in with an extraordinary price tag at the time before the fees had become quite astronomical as they have over the last year. And there was so much pressure on him. And now they've got Lukaku and they've got Pogba. He just seems to have been, you know, forgotten in maybe a good way. He's come in and he's just done his bit towards the end of games. And now when he's starting, he's scoring goals as well.
Seb Martella says, has Mourinho's insane treatment of Martial and Mkhitaryan actually worked?
Martial, he hasn't started back-to-back games since May. And you'd expect him to play against Palace at the weekend, unless he was taken off with a slight injury. But as you said, considering his how productive he's been, I think it's time to give him a run of games.
Martial needed a bit of time to adapt and to realise that now he has to be a big boy, you know, in a big club, in a huge club with a big manager as well. He can't just wait for someone to say, come here, Anthony, and let me show you what you have to do a bit better. And, you know, you're a very good player and this and that. It's not going to happen anymore. So he needs to take his own responsibilities. And I think he's done that. Although, as much as I like him as well, the two big games he had were against CSKA Moscow, who were really bad. Yeah. And against Burton Albion, who are, no offence, really bad.
Okay, the Berezovsky brothers.
No, but yeah, Berezovsky and Ignacevic last night were just horrendous. So I'm just thinking, if, you know, when he will do that in a much bigger game, then I'll say, okay, I've seen the improvement, I like what I'm seeing. But those two matches, I think it's hard. As good as he's been, you know, and against Stoke, there's that clip that you see against Diouf.
Well, against Palace, you'd probably fancy his chances, wouldn't you?
But again, it would be a game that, you know, everybody is good against Palace this season. So I want to see him being like that in bigger game against the big boys.
The thing I like about Manchester United at the moment is I'm not sure who their key player is. You could say it's Lukaku, you could say it's Pogba. People have talked about Matic, but it's not just based around one man. And, you know, the teams that win the title usually are good functioning teams rather than just entirely based around one individual.
Fair point. Palace have gone 630 minutes, seven matches, since scoring a goal in the Premier League. That was back on May the 14th. And now they've lost Christian Benteke as well.
One bright spot for Palace has been Ruben Loftus-Cheek, a player who, you know, a lot of people who watch youth football and who follow Chelsea were very positive about. And he's been playing in the kind of number 10 position. And his movement is fantastic. He's very good on the ball. It's a real shame about Benteke's injury for him, because he's obviously the kind of player who needs a big man to play off. But it's good to see him getting game time. And I think Hodgson's system might suit him well.
Right. Looks like being a tough afternoon, though, for Crystal Palace when they travel to Man United. Let's take another little break and then let's mop up some of the other stories from midweek in Europe. Listeners, like a stat, have a go on this one. 81% of men who try the Cornerstone razor don't go back to their old one. I know. Find out more and get £10 off your first order and free delivery too at cornerstone.co.uk/totally. If you're listening on Thursday and your name is Kelly Cates, happy birthday to you. Well, happy birthday to you if your name is something else and it's your birthday, frankly.
Totti's birthday yesterday.
That's right, on Wednesday.
Yeah.
It's my birthday next week.
On a similarly heartwarming note, here's Nah writing in to say, is there any sweeter storyline this weekend than Simon Grayson potentially losing his job against the side he left the day before, the day that pre-season started? Grayson teetering on the brink after Sunderland lost 5-2 against Ipswich when was that? Was that midweek? Yeah, it was midweek. Yeah. And next up, they got Preston North End. I tell you what, if you want to hear about more of that kind of thing and the big match between Preston North End and Sunderland, you need the Totally Football League show. Hello.
Sorry, Fran Escriba in La Liga was the Getafe manager and was sacked last year after losing to Villarreal, then became Villarreal manager and was sacked this season after losing to Getafe.
No way!
Which I thought was funny.
You must have chuckled at that. Calcio Culture writing in, citing one or two of our early Champions League predictions, specifically that Benfica would be the tournament surprise package. How did they get on this week?
Lost 5-0 to Basel.
Who said that, though? Who said that?
I think that was Rafa. I'm going to say Rafa.
Rafa, yeah. 5-0 to Basel.
Yeah.
Portuguese press saying, vergonha.
Ooh,
yeah, shame. What else, apparently, did we say? Timo Werner would be the breakthrough player. Did he have a good week, Timo Werner?
That's Rafa. Yeah.
It's a great story. That's one of the stories of the week.
Yeah.
So tell us yours.
Well, he had to come off after half an hour because he couldn't...
He was away at Besiktas.
Away at Besiktas, so he couldn't cope, apparently, with the noise in the stadium. And a few times, it's true, a few times you saw him with his fingers in his ears because he didn't want to hear the... You know, and he had a bad headache and had to come off.
He put earplugs in as well.
He tried with even the earplugs couldn't help him, apparently.
Yeah, but he must have a condition or something because noisy as it was, everyone else was dealing with it. He must have some kind of ear condition that made him especially sensitive to the noise.
But he must have been great atmosphere, but... I think the Yellow Wall in Dortmund, where he has played before, is surely a very similar atmosphere than the one at Besiktas he had on Tuesday night. So
another big win there. Anyway, for Besiktas. Anyway, what else does Culture remember that we said? We didn't have Kane as the golden boot, but, you know, early days. And apparently...
It was August.
One of us said that Spurs would be the worst underachievers, and the Totally Football Show's account replying that, in a sense, they are, because they've been the worst at underachieving in the sense that they haven't underachieved at all. So that pretty much answers Culture's point there. I mean, it's a mugs game, isn't it? Predictions. What do you think is going to happen as Spurs take on Huddersfield this weekend?
I think Spurs will win fairly comfortably. Huddersfield, a very well-organised team. Good at pressing, of course, like Spurs, but I think Spurs have got too much.
14 sheets in their six games.
Huddersfield.
Yeah.
They haven't played Harry Kane yet, have they?
No, who, poor old Mrs. Pochettino is getting jealous because, did you see what...
He said he was in love with him.
In love with him, yeah.
He said it again?
He said it again, yeah.
All right, well...
But he also said that Kane's wife is now, fiancée, is jealous of him as well.
Old man Groom saying, fair to say that Kane is making Apple crumble. Johnny Blaine pointing out... Then in the last six away games, Kane has scored 14 goals and Arsenal have scored six.
He's got six hat-tricks this calendar year.
That's stupid.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Michael.
I thought his second and third goals in midweek were really interesting because the first one was a kind of classic on the shoulder of the defence going in behind. The second and third, he took up very deeper positions and got in the zones for those cutbacks that I think defences find really difficult to cope against. And he's an interesting player, Kane, because for all his kind of incredible goal scoring statistics, he doesn't consider himself an out-and-out striker. You know, he took the number 10 shirt. He played a lot in a kind of deeper role when coming through at Tottenham. And the second and third goals reminded me of, you know, as an Englishman, what I'm contractually obliged to say is the Teddy Sheringham position for the cutback. And it just shows, you know, he's really good all-around player, scores different types of goals. And that's why he's scoring so many, because I don't think defenders really have figured him out.
The third one is a 1-2 between him and Trippier, where he got the ball really deep and played it to Trippier wide on the right, and then kept running and found the space at the edge of the box for the header. And like Michael said, is that movement as well. People tend to forget when you talk about Kane and the finishing is brilliant, and you know he's strong and he's quick, and we saw that against Dortmund. But I think that his movement off the ball has really improved as well with Pochettino.
All right. Well, it looks like Trippier will probably be lining up alongside him again this weekend, because so it's all year. Is suspended after picking up Spurs' first red card in 84 league games.
Wow, really?
Weekend.
That's very impressive for a team who are so based on physicality and pushing up and committing into challenges. That's a great record.
Mm. Elsewhere in Europe, hey, the 5-0 winners you weren't expecting, we certainly weren't, Basel, who bounced into second spot in Man United's group with an absolute caning of Benfica in real trouble. Spanish sides, Real beat Borussia Dortmund. That's the first ever win there. Fantastic goal from Gareth Bale. Wonderful, no? The technique.
But also the ball from Carvajal as
That's
well.
Fair,
Very little
yeah.
kind of backlift on it. It was just a beautiful all-round goal.
But the interesting thing here was Real Madrid kept getting in exactly the same way because Dortmund were playing so high up the pitch. They played diagonal balls. And it was all about... It was a kind of constant storyline of whether Real Madrid players would square to each other in behind their defence or not. And that's pretty much how Tottenham played against Dortmund. Mm. So, you know, Dortmund have got this incredible defensive record in the Bundesliga, but they've come up against Tottenham and Real and they've just been exposed in exactly the same way.
Mm. Sevilla beat Maribor. They had a hat-trick from Ben Yedder. All three Italian sides won. Napoli beat Feyenoord at home. Juve laboured a little bit against the Greeks at Olympiacos.
Yeah, but Allegri's saying intelligent, patient performance.
All right, okay, fair enough. So yeah, they've won their last five in the Champions League and they've only conceded one goal. At home, this is, sorry. Won the last five at home in the Champions League. They only conceded one goal in that time. The worrying news, perhaps, for Juventus is the fact that Sporting are looking quite dangerous in that group. Sporting, who Barcelona only scraped past thanks to an own goal from Sebastian Coates. They'll be facing Juventus next home and away. Did you know, here's a Barcelona stat. Lionel Messi, their top scorer this season, 12 goals. Do you know who their second top scorer is?
Own goals?
It is.
I watched the goals.
Ah! Yeah,
we own goals show.
Nice. The other Italian side in action was Roma, who looked like they were going to absolutely destroy Carabag, but ended up narrowly winning 2-1 away in Baku. Michael Cox saying, I'm a huge fan of Kara Karayev playing for Karabag, up there with Wolfgang Wolf managing Wolfsburg.
Their manager is also called Gurban Gurbanov.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah,
I had some great Twitter responses for this. Fernando Di Napoli used to play for Napoli, of course. Mm-hmm. Apparently Harvey Barnes this week scored for Barnsley. And the best one, which I think was from last season, if he pointed out that Hartley Paul had scorers called Hartley and Paul
same
game.
True.
Which is just great.
Also, Mikkel Jongsma saying, I've probably mentioned it before, but the assistant of FC Groningen is Marcel Groningen.
That is good.
Do you remember Flavio Roma?
Yes.
Who was from Rome, but kind of came through at Lazio. Yeah. I mean, if he played for Roma.
That close.
Thin
line. He didn't, yeah?
Yeah, he didn't know.
Okay. Also, there used to be a player called Lee Norfolk, and he played for Ipswich. Of course, they're from Suffolk, which is very near.
Yeah. Yep. We're struggling.
We've gone too far.
Let's talk instead, then, after a heaping praise on Paris Saint-Germain earlier. Let's ask what on earth's going on, Jules, with the French champions Monaco, who started their Champions League campaign with a 1-1 draw. They got beaten 3-0 at home to Porto. This, of course, was a rematch of the 2004 Champions League final, and they lost it by the same scoreline. Equally worrying, no doubt, for Leonardo Desjardins, is the fact that they've only had 3 shots in 2 games.
Yeah.
Is that because they sold off all their best players?
No.
Or is that too obvious?
No. I think they are rebuilding the team, which is never easy because they lost so much talent and so many players in the summer. But I don't think anyone expected this kind of performance. I think Jardim got the lineup wrong. It was a similar lineup to the one that got battered 4-0 at Nice a few weeks before, with Diakabi playing up front with Falcao, which I think everybody, you know, can agree now that it's just not working out. And Jovetic, who's played really well the last 2 games with Falcao up front, is a much better fit for Falcao. But Jovetic was left on the bench for most of the game. So there was a few choices from Jardim that were surprising. And I just think they were outpowered by this Porto team, who was, I have to say, really impressive. The intensity they played with, Sergio Conceição is a great manager, I think, and he's really got them playing really well, high intensity football. Marega and Aboubakar up front were running riots. Kamil Glick was, it looked like he was his twin brother playing. He was that bad. And Danilo Pereira in midfield, who PSG were interested in him in the summer and almost signed him, was outstanding. I thought the power, the intelligence in the movement and everything was just fantastic.
Jules, that's fantastic, but I feel we've had enough about the midweek action. Still to come, we might touch on one or two of the Thursday fixtures, but all sorts of other interesting stories from around the wider world of football. Do these count as interesting stories? Do they, Michael? Bournemouth, Leicester. Yeah. Some of the games happening this weekend. Yep. Stop me if you want to leap in here, any of you boys. Bournemouth taking on Leicester. Cherries have lost 4 of their last 5, whilst the Foxes have had a win and a draw from their first 7. So that's not very good. Hey, Stoke taking on Saints. Just 1 win so far for Stoke. It could be in the bottom 3 by the end of the weekend. How about that?
They weren't even that good in their win against Arsenal. I think they were very lucky.
Mm.
Can we see Darren Fletcher at the back again, please? Because that was really funny. That was
didn't
really
work
funny.
Out too well.
Kurt Zuma's back, though, no?
Yeah. West Brom are taking on Watford, which is interesting. West Ham, meanwhile, are taking on Swansea. Swansea yet to concede a goal away from home. But don't expect them to do too many shots or anything like that at the London Stadium. Hammers won both meetings last season. Perhaps you'll find Everton's clash with Burnley more to your taste. Burnley, after all, are four games without a defeat, and they've been brilliant on the road. They've taken 5 points from trips to Chelsea, Liverpool and Spurs so far. Are they going to get more points away at Goodison?
I think they could well cause an upset. This is an interesting game because Everton have a lot of very talented players, but they don't really have any structure or any organisation. And I think what Sean Dyche has done at Burnley is very effective. And I think if Everton look to play on the front foot and dominate possession, that could very much play into the hands of Burnley, who are good on the counter-attack and just defend very well. The two banks of four, it's a kind of old-fashioned approach, but it works very well for them.
All right, problems for Everton. Jagielka has a hamstring problem. Michael Keane is also a doubt. Of course, former Burnley player, you say an upset potentially for Burnley. The last time they won at Goodison was far off January 1976 when ABBA, with the sound of a fresh generation coming through with Mamma Mia, having knocked Bohemian Rhapsody off the top of the charts.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that is the Queen. Someone told me this fact the other day I found quite interesting. Queen's song Bohemian Rhapsody doesn't say Bohemian Rhapsody in the song.
Right, but Mamma Mia much does.
But Mamma Mia is in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Wow, it'd be interesting if Mamma Mia then mentioned Bohemian Rhapsody.
You just go on forever.
Wow. Two great songs, that much is beyond
I suppose
question.
This game could be a case of Umania. Umanias, no?
Oh, my God. Oh. Yeah. That's well done, actually. Speaking of Nias, Ben Marlowe was writing in talking. He said, oh, yeah, I love the chat about XG, but what about X-ass? And he says, I was joking, but they are actually, it is a real thing.
The expected assists.
Nias has nil ass this season.
Oh.
According to Ben Marlowe. So you take that up with him.
I mean, I thought X-ass would be, you know, goals scored from being a substitute, which is 83% in the ass's case.
The
problem with expected goals is the name. Expected goals is a terrible name, but it's a really good measure.
Okay, what would you call it, Michael?
Something to do with shot value around that. Okay. It's like, you know, everyone knows shots. You know, you look at the end of a game on TV and they say 15 shots. All expected goals does is, if it's a really easy open goal from 1 yard, you count that as one. Mm. And if it's a shot from the halfway line, you count it as 0.01. And then you add it. And instead of getting 15 shots, which has no context, you get, you know, 2.7.
I do take, but expected goals sounds like the sort of thing you'd say about Man City taking on Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
Yeah, I expect goals.
If you change the name, I think people would be more open to it. But it's on Match of the Day now. It's become established. So
it hasn't in my household, I can tell you that much. Arsenal are taking on Brighton. Arsenal, of course, have got to make that long, long journey to the home of the tractor, Bate Borisov.
You mentioned birthdays earlier.
Yes.
On Sunday, it's Bruno Sautor's birthday, the Brighton right-back, and he's 37, and his birthday present is taking on Alexis Sanchez, so I think maybe it's not a very happy birthday for him.
Well, we shall see. Of course, Arsenal have been in action since last we spoke. They had that game at home to West Brom, didn't they? Lacazette,
scoring in three home games in a row for the first time for an Arsenal player since 1988, I think, which is a pretty good record that even, you know, Thierry Henry, for example, didn't do.
Brighton won against Newcastle last weekend, unless my memory fails.
But their goal scorer is suspended, Thomas Hemed.
Yeah, Thomas Hemed.
Hemed.
Yeah. How come he's suspended?
For violent conduct for a stamp on Dandry Yedlin.
Oh, of course, yeah.
He stamped on his head a bit for the goal, and then he stamped on his calf later on. It's like a double stamp, even.
All right, then. The only thing that's more exciting than all of those games in the Premier League is, James, the weekend's action in Syria. Here's a quick question for you. This is Aaron, who brings up a subject that's been bubbling away for years now. Will a drop to 18 or even 16 teams in Serie A happen? And why do most of the promoted teams so out of their depth? there's once again quite a healthy kind of momentum towards reducing the number of Serie A sides.
Yeah, I mean, there's the political will from the president of the Italian Football Federation and particularly some of the big clubs in Serie A. But it's kind of like asking turkeys to vote for Christmas. And I think getting this over the line is going to be very difficult for them to do, even when you've got someone like Carlo Tavecchio pushing it. But I think, you know, to answer that question in full about the promoted sides and just, yeah, we see it more and more that clubs are coming up on the back of double promotions and they're kind of finding themselves out of their depth. We saw it with Frosinone a couple of years ago. We're seeing it with Benevento and Spal, who were great kind of romantic stories of taking the momentum from getting up from the third division to the second and then to the first. But particularly in Benevento's case, for example, it does look like a bridge too far. And we saw, I think, a fortnight ago in Serie A, the promoted sides get beaten by an aggregate score of 11-0. And OK, I think they were taking on top six sides. But you'd like to see kind of more competitive balance, even in those games.
Well, even when they take you on sides down the, you know, the nether ends, like Crotone, Benevento get beaten 2-0 last weekend. They have, I think, possibly one of the best nicknames in football. The Witches of the South.
Yeah.
But one of the worst records. And they've lost all six games. They've conceded 16 goals and scored only one.
Yeah. And they're called the Witches because, of course, there were witches in that in that part of Italy. They used to just sort of congregate under walnut trees.
Makes them easy, you know, if you're a witch hunter.
Yeah. And also, actually, they were shapeshifters as well.
Oh,
they would sometimes appear as goats or even dogs. Yeah. So what the citizens of Benevento would do, they'd leave like a brush outside of their door or a bag of salt. And the kind of intent behind that was so that the witches would have to count every hair in the brush and count every grain of salt.
Why? Were they kind of obsessive? Or?
And if they did it before the sun rose, they could obviously get into the house.
Ah.
But because there were so many, you know, hairs to count or grains of salt to count, the sun would come up and they would have to go away.
Wow, first with household tips, the total football show. That's great. In Italy, there are lots of areas. So that was the area, it's just south of Naples, Benevento, no?
Yes.
So there's lots of areas in Italy where supposedly witchcraft is rife. South of Rome, the Castelli Romani, I think, that they or the Colli Albanesi.
Yeah.
But also around Turin.
Mm.
That's probably the number one focal area to this day for the dark arts.
Yeah. I mean,
We saw
Andrea Agnelli get banned for a year this week selling tickets to ultras. That was, and those ultras, because they were making a lot of money from it, drew the attention of elements of organized crime, people connected to the Calabrian mafia, the 'Ndrangheta. So not a good look in that case. But
yeah, especially for a man who's just been elected. Well, head of European football, no?
Yeah, and to be honest, I mean, Agnelli, look, he's a modernising force for the game in Italian football.
He's improved ticket sales.
Yes, at least, yeah. which is a shame because, you know, he has done more than anyone to drag Italian football into the 21st century. But Benevento play Inter this weekend. You know, if Benevento wear the colours yellow and red, which was the kind of the colours of the label of the liqueur that is made down there, which is named after the witches, Le Streghe, which is like a kind of it's a very floral kind of yellow, kind of saffrony liqueur.
Mm. Graham Griffiths says, please don't do an Aberdeen on my beloved Napoli. It's all very well giving deserved praise to Ciro Mertens' goal. But don't jinx them like you did the Dons a few years back. They're hosting Cagliari, Napoli, this weekend. The big game, though, James, is, of course, Sunday's Milan-Roma, especially because, bizarrely, the papers this week are full of talk that Vincenzo Montella, former Roma manager, is now living on borrowed time on the bench at Milan. They've lost two games all season. They've won all their other matches. Why is he under pressure?
I think it's a reflection of just how high the stakes are for Milan this season, because they have to qualify for the Champions League just on how the takeover of the club was structured. They need that income, and particularly after the amount of money that they spent in the summer on buying a new team. And that's, you know, the chief executive, Marco Fassone, came out after the defeat to Sampdoria at the weekend and said, We expected there to be teething problems, but not to lose twice in six games and lose to, we can lose to a team like Lazio, for example, but not Sampdoria. Mm. Some worrying signs for Milan. We've seen Montella sack his fitness coach this week. I think, you could expect this to happen in some respects because, they've bought an entire new team.
Mm. It's not like they're down in the bottom half or anything.
No, but I think the expectation was that they would compete for a Champions League place quite comfortably and maybe even push Juventus and Napoli for the title. Already, even though it's early days, that seems to be getting away from them. I think it's quite interesting that Roma, one of the clubs that they were expecting to maybe overhaul, because Roma lost the likes of Szczesny, Rudiger, Salah in the summer. Roma have actually been decent so far in this season. Yeah, they've won all but one of their games, and their only defeat was against Inter, which for 70 minutes they completely outplayed Inter, 1-0 up, should have had a penalty, hit the woodwork three times. So, I think this comes at quite an inopportune time, really, for Montella, because, I wouldn't be surprised. I think Roma are further along and much more of a team at the moment than Milan are.
Carlo Ancelotti is free.
That's
Milan.
True, Jules. How nice. All right, well, thank you so much for being with us today, Jules.
Thank you for having me.
And James Horncastle, and also Michael Cox, and you listeners will be back on Monday. So do make sure that you join us then. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.